Hi, everyone. I am really excited to be here today to discuss a little bit about a project that we've been working on and talking a little bit more about the future steps. My name is Michelle Cantu. I'm the STD Programs Manager for the California Family Health Council. And the California Family Health Council is the holds federal Title X funds for the state of California, so we fund family planning clinics across the state. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So CFHC's STD program is funded by the CDC's Infertility Prevention Project, which was implemented to really address the chlamydia epidemic in the United States. Some of the activities that we incorporate for our Title X agencies include prevalence monitoring, education and training, outreach and screening projects. We provide technical assistance when needed, and we also do research projects with the data we collect. Why focus on chlamydia? It's one of the most commonly reported bacterial STDs in the United States, with roughly 3 million cases reported annually. It's called the silent disease because it's often asymptomatic in both men and women, and it's broadly distributed both geographically and socioeconomically. When left untreated, chlamydia can lead to some very serious complications. Up to 40% of cases can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, and further complications include chronic pelvic pain, ectopic pregnancy, and infertility. So now I'm going to talk a little bit more about chlamydia and gonorrhea reinfection. And so the first thing that I wanted to talk about was how common it is. So looking at baseline data in red here, there you go. Baseline positivity versus repeat chlamydia positivity by age, looking at females in family planning settings, we see that it's actually quite common, and reinfection rates are high among all age groups when we look at this data in the California family planning settings, which is very interesting because screening guidelines normally and typically say that we should screen 15 to age 25. However, even in the older age groups, we see a high rate of reinfection rates. In addition, we also looked at how dangerous it is. So this is data provided to us by Hillis, and it's basically depicting a relative risk based off of chlamydia infection leading to pelvic inflammatory disease and ectopic pregnancy. So what we see here is that when a woman gets a second infection, she has 4 times the risk of progressing to pelvic inflammatory disease and 2 times the risk of her chlamydia infection developing into ectopic pregnancy. 3 or more infections increase that risk, with 6 times in pelvic inflammatory disease and 5 times for ectopic pregnancy. Looking at retesting rates in California, this is data showing over time, looking at the LA County, California project area, and San Francisco area. And so what we see in about 2007, the retesting rates increased, and this is partially due to the 2006 CDC guidelines. What we see is that although it's heading in the right way going up, it's still fairly low, only 40%. In LA and about 50, going towards 50% in San Francisco. So when we showed this data to family planning providers, you know, trying to figure out why retesting rates were so low, the majority of them said, well, you know, patients just didn't return. And so what we did was we looked at family claims data or billing data and tried to identify how many people did actually return. So what we found was that although 44% did not return, 56% actually did return. And so looking at that 56%, we wanted to see who was retested and who wasn't. And what we see is although 36% were returned and were retested, 20% returned but were not retested. And this is really an area that we want to focus more on. When trying to figure out what might possibly be happening in that area, we looked at clinical service gaps or missed opportunities for retesting. So this data is kind of confusing to look at, but I'll try to go through it really quickly. So we're looking at retesting and reinfection rates by visit type. So visit types on the bottom. And what I really just wanted to hone in on were these limited service visits, which include pregnancy test or emergency contraception and birth control refill. And these were visits that aren't typically seen by providers. They may be seen by medical assistants or even just by the front desk. And so what we see is that their retesting rates are actually really low, but these are services that indicate high-risk sexual behavior. So these are definitely areas that we would like to fill in the gaps. So this is data from Park at the STD Control Branch, who we work really closely with. And she looked at family planning provider knowledge, attitudes, and practices. And in 2007, she did a CAP survey, which was completed by 268 family planning providers in California Title X family planning agencies. And the idea was to identify knowledge about retesting among family planning providers, to assess provider attitudes and barriers towards retesting, and ultimately to identify practices that were utilized to ensure that the patient returned for retesting. What she found was that 82% of providers reported at least one barrier to retesting, and not shockingly, the most common barrier was that the patients just didn't return to the clinic. 44% utilized high intensity to ensure patients returned, which really just indicated that they used flags to chart and to let the staff have reminders about retesting. But in summation, what was interesting about this data was she really talked about adopting clinical policies that will likely be an important component to ensure that patients return for retesting. And so when I started looking at data from our IPP Sentinel sites, which were really just additional sites that were providing data to us, I wanted to first look at retesting rates, and then on top of that, look at what kind of clinical practices and protocols were in place for those who were who did best practices and had the highest performing rates. So we conducted a retesting survey, which was a phone interview during August and September of 2009 regarding clinical chlamydia and gonorrhea retesting protocols and policies. Clinics were incentivized for doing the survey, and the data that was collected included clinic retesting priorities categorized by high, medium, and low, appointment setting for retesting, the educational materials on retesting, reminders for staff to retest, and reminders for the client to return. So the first thing we looked at was when retesting counseling actually took place. And so for all of the clinics, upon the time that the patient came into the clinic for treatment, the patient was counseled on the importance of retesting. In addition, 54% of clinics incorporated patient educational materials at the visit time. About 15% incorporated the message of retesting in the letters that they sent out, and this is primarily for patients that they couldn't reach. And then finally, 22% would call patients upon receiving their positive lab result and would incorporate the retesting counseling at that point. When we looked further about appointment setting and retesting, we divided this into two categories. And the two categories we included were passive and active. The passive are shown in dark blue, and the active are shown in light blue here. But passive really was those clinics that left it up to the patient or had left it to be the patient's responsibility to set the appointment. And so about 75% of those clinics that were surveyed regarded it as the patient's responsibility to set the appointment. About 39% actually had the clinic staff assign an appointment at the time of the chlamydia treatment. And then finally, about 7% made a phone call 3 months after treatment to ensure that the patient knew the importance about coming back in and getting retested. Finally, I looked at staff reminder systems and then client reminder systems. And so in the clinic, what we saw was about 61% used flags or charted their flags in order to remind staff that the patient was coming back in to get retested. At the time of the survey, we didn't have the clinic sites on EMR. They're now on EMR, so we're hoping to look more in depth on that. About 22% used a logbook, and those that came under the category of other had various protocols, including MAs or providers looking at the chart just prior to seeing the patient. When looking at client reminders, what was really surprising and just maybe from my naive standpoint, about 69% had no method to actually contact the patient to remind them to come back to the clinic. 31% would contact the patient by phone, and about 5% actually had incentives to get the patient to come back in. Now, this is a slide that has a lot of information in it, but ultimately what I did was I ranked the sites based off of their retesting rates. As you can see here, really two stood out. They were still kind of low retesting rates, but it was about 60% and 50%. Just things I wanted to note was I first looked at retesting priority in the clinics, and that didn't really seem to have much of an effect if they regarded it as a high priority or low priority. Something that did seem to, or a trend that seemed to be important was that the appointment setting for those who retested high was very active versus those with lower retesting rates, which used a more passive way of getting patients to come back in. In addition, they had multiple retesting counseling messages. They had patient reminders. And this also seemed to be something that seemed a little significant because those who had higher retesting rates had patient reminders, whereas those who had lower retesting rates had little to none. And in addition, also staff reminders, where some had at least two staff reminders. Those who had lower retesting rates had none. So the conclusions that we have in, from the study was that clinics had an average of 29% retesting rate, which was really low. More than half of the clinics did not categorize retesting as a high priority. Many agencies do not have a system in place to remind staff that the patient needed retesting. And few agencies have the client make a follow-up appointment at the time of treatment, just due to the fact that their appointment books don't go that far in advance. However, clinics with the highest retesting rates had really great clinical protocols kind of set in place. They had designated staff to follow up with the chlamydia-positive patients. They incorporated consistent and repeated health educational messages, and they utilized multiple client and staff reminders for retesting. So recommendations that we give to the Titleton Family Planning Clinics after seeing this data is that chlamydia retesting should take place 3 months after treatment, and that agencies should opportunistically test when a client comes in, regardless of the visit, 1 to 12 months after treatment. That agencies should implement a protocol with several strategies at the clinical level, including patient reminders, and that agencies should develop cues to alert themselves and other clinicians when the client comes in during the recommended retesting period. So future steps. Although this data was very preliminary and we really didn't look into if there was one factor over another that really got people back in, what we did was we are collaborating currently with the California State Department of Health, Heidi Bauer and Holly Howard at the California State Department. We just received funding from the Office of Population Affairs to conduct this study called InTouch, which stands for Innovative Technology-Based Outreach and Utilization of Client Home Testing to Improve Chlamydia Gonorrhea Retesting. A mouthful again. But this is actually a really great study. I'm really looking forward to being a part of it. It's a three-phase study where the first phase is really just collecting baseline data on retesting 1 to 6 months. The second phase is incorporating some of the clinical protocols that I talked about, really trying to highlight best practices. We went into the clinics and did trainings. We tried to help them incorporate safety nets, but really creating something that was really efficient for the clinic and not relying so much on the clinician, but really creating this kind of community and having the clinic work as a whole. And then the third phase is incorporating more patient-specific reminders where the patient can choose how they want to be reminded. This can include an email, a text message, a phone call, a letter, anything like that. So we'll be able to really kind of analyze the data over these three phases. And I just wanted to send a quick thank you to all of our IPP Sentinel sites, all of our collaborating partners, and all of my colleagues at the California Family Health Council. And that's it. Thank you.